Welcome to MSU Today. Our first guest today is Joe Salem, a director of the Michigan State University Library System. And I call it a system because there's really a lot to it than many people might expect. But Joe, it's great to have you on the program today.
Thanks, Bill. It's great to be here.
So Joe, one of the things that that I think is very interesting is how libraries continue to evolve over time. Many of us in our youth remember going to a library and there'd be a card in a pocket in the back of the book that would get stamped. And you'd functionally check out a book, and that was kind of the library. But libraries have evolved immensely over the years. And so my first question may seem a little silly on one hand, but I think it's sort of profound on another, and that is, you know, what is a library today?
Well, thanks, Bill. You know, it's not a silly question at all. I think it is a profound question. I always think about what we are at our core, and it helps to explain and keep us grounded as we keep moving forward. You know, at its core, a library has always been the same thing. A library provides people with the resources they need to learn, either in a structured environment like a university or on their own in a public library or a special library. So it provides those resources. It provides the space, either physical or online space, to use those resources, to create new information or knowledge with those resources. And then this is the really important part. It wraps all that with technology with expertise. And that can be in the form of technology-enabled expertise or in-person expertise. You get those three things together, and any part of it can change over time. So the actual resources, that's changed greatly. We're increasingly digital first with a lot of our resources, even the information resources. We have a pretty good collections budget and a really robust collection here. 70% of it is spent on digital resources. The space is beautiful here on campus, but it's also really useful online. What makes it a library is those two components, and then having the experts to help you use, find, analyze, and then create with whatever you're using. And so as that kind of portfolio of any part of that changes over time, it's fun to see what that impacts as far as the user expectations, where they're interacting with us, what they think of the library. But it's essentially the same mission, and it helps us to pick out where do we want to grow and invest and continue to move as we keep moving forward. And as long as we stay grounded in that those three essential elements, I think we're going to be fine.
Well, in my prior role at the university, when I was vice president and secretary of our board of trustees, from time to time, we'd be doing research on a particular topic, and I'd come across what felt to me like an obscure article, perhaps, or something that I wasn't sure where to get my hands on. And I'd call over to the library, and it seemed as though almost instantaneously sometimes the article would appear in my inbox. And a couple sort of, I think, things to note in that, you know, one is that the library really does an extraordinary job of serving people remotely and working, as you say, you know, so much more digitally now than one might think of historically in terms of the library of their growing up. And so I think that's particularly relevant, you know, in today's environment where we're in the middle of this pandemic, and remote services and digital services are so important. So how could you just talk a little bit about those kinds of services and how you're able to support people, you know, really almost regardless of where they are around the globe?
The remote work, you know, it's part of a little bit of a mindset shift. We've been really creating a digital library here at MSU well before I got here over the last 10 to 15 years. The mindset shift in the last few months has been, how do we do this digital first or remote first? And I think the university's dealt with that as well. We're in a really good spot to be able to do that, though. So we offer what we've traditionally called reference services. We offer that remotely. So users come to our website, students and faculty and staff and community users come to our website. They can ask questions just like they do when they go to any retail website. They get a help question, a little link, and they get to ask questions and get referral to experts if that frontline staff can't answer their questions. So we're able to provide those services remotely. We always did, but now it's kind of digital first. It's on more pages, and it's where we do a lot more referrals. With the digital collections, we were able to provide access to those collections anywhere and all the time. What I think we've really learned over the last few months is how to further integrate that into courses. About a year ago, we recruited our first open educational resources librarian with the goal of decreasing costs or holding the line on costs for course materials. That person, Regina Gong, she's nationally known. We're very lucky to recruit her to MSU. Having her on board months before the pandemic really hit was really wonderful because we were already starting to think about library materials and courses. And what does that mean as far as, first of all, open and no cost, but also licensing course materials. So we've been using library materials to do that and thinking digitally first whenever we can. It's a little bit more tricky with course materials because that business model still wants to sell individual textbooks to students. But where we can get involved, we've been doing that. And the librarians have been identifying really great resources to do that as well. And I've been really encouraged. We've been lucky. The governor's orders allowed us to keep basic operations even as early as March. So we have really great units like our ILS, our Interlibrary Services Unit, and our Patron Services Unit that do take digital requests, and we fulfill a lot of things digitally. But there are some things in some publishing areas where the business model doesn't work for them digitally yet. And so we've been moving a lot of our physical collections around. We have a really great service. We always offered it to distance learners, and that was defined as anyone 50 miles or more away from the university. Now we've just defined everyone as a distance learner because we all are. And we're shipping books to them with return mailers. And that's been a very popular service. It's been really heavily used, and we anticipate that it will be. And we've been able to do that because our ILS colleagues never really left the building. They've been providing that. Some days as many as 100 books go out on that service. So it's been a lot of digital services, but there have been some traditional services that we've just been finding new ways to meet the need there.
Well, and that's, to me, a really interesting point. Our physical library on Circle Drive and on campus in East Lansing, has millions and millions of volumes and more digital materials beyond that. But really, when we think of the MSU library, we can think of a library that is maybe not infinite in scope, but much, much larger than our physical presence on campus because of the interlibrary loan arrangements that we have. So could you just share with us the scope of, if I come in and I'm looking for a particular volume that, despite our incredible collection at MSU, we may not own, our library has the ability to, literally scan the country and see if another library has that volume or that article or what have you to get that for us. So really, although we have one library that physically sits on our campus, the network of libraries that we consider friends and share materials with is vast.
It is, Bill, and that's a really great point. The overall network is vast. The other one that we really want to think about, and you work with this on the athletic side, is our core network, our core consortium, is the Big Ten. And the Big Ten is not only an amazing conference for athletics, it's also an amazing athletic association. We recently worked with a group called OCLC. It's a group within libraries. And we commissioned a study to look at how the Big Ten could be even more collaborative as far as building collections together and sharing those collections. We already do through interlibrary services, but how can we be even more proactive in building those collections together? But in that report, what they found was that among the 14 Big Ten libraries, we already hold about 25% of the scholarship that's published in English. That's remarkable. The North American scholarship printed in English, if I remember correctly. That's remarkable, though, if you think about what we have just within that media network. And then obviously we can request things through interlibrary services, and they come from all around the world. And our group does that. They hunt things down and they deliver them. Quite often they deliver them digitally. We do it at no cost, or at the very lowest cost we can to our users. It's an amazing service. And the fact that we were able to provide it this entire time throughout the pandemic is actually pretty noteworthy. Much more of our network is coming online. We're seeing more of our colleagues in similar services throughout the Big Ten and other research libraries are getting back into their facilities. But there were many months where we were the only interlibrary services group, certainly within the Big Ten, providing that service. So it makes it more challenging sometimes to get materials from other libraries. What we found was when we couldn't find it in another library, we worked with our acquisitions unit, which was also available in the building and really dedicated. We just made purchases to fulfill need for faculty and students. The real goal is to facilitate research and academic success. And so the dedication of this group and the fact that they really never left has been, I really found it to be inspiring. And it's one of those things where I want to make sure that we get them what they need to keep their work going, because they've been keeping the campus going in some ways.
Yeah, no, 25% is it really is an extraordinary figure.
Among 14 libraries, it's just remarkable to me.
Yeah, no, that's really very, very amazing. And you think about the wealth of information that's printed in the English language, just extraordinary. So one of the things that I've always found interesting, and I've been visiting the MSU library really most of my life, and it's fun to walk the halls and walk through the stacks and see the extraordinary array of materials available from the map library to our extensive collection in things like turf grass and other areas. And you know, each library, I think, tends to have collections that develop, and really I'm not sure why, but collections that develop in certain areas of strength. And obviously at MSU, turf grass and the agricultural areas have been historic strengths for us over 150 plus years. But can you talk about some of the more interesting collections that MSU is nationally and internationally regarded for? I think it might surprise people, for example, that MSU has one of the world's great collections of cookbooks or of comic books.
It's one of the really great parts of my job is talking about our collections and our kind of noteworthy collections and our areas of strength and really what distinguishes us from other libraries. And that's one of the really fun parts of what we get to do at a major research library like MSU's libraries. So we do have some really unique areas of expertise. The turf grass collection that you mentioned, it's not even kind of fair to say that it's the best in the world. I mean, it's probably the only in its size and scope and comprehensiveness. That collection is not only a research collection, but also is used to create the turf grass information file. And that's a really core database and research tool used by researchers in the field and in that industry. It's hosted at MSU and it's available worldwide and it's highly regarded. It's a really wonderful resource. So that's one of our areas of strength, and it's certainly an area of distinction and known throughout the world. You mentioned a couple of areas within our special collections. The cookbook and cookery collection is a major and noteworthy part of our special collections library. The special collections library is named the entire special collections library is not named after, but grew out of our popular culture collection, named after Russell Nye, who was a professor at MSU and focused a lot on popular culture. And we have some really remarkable areas of distinction within that collection. The major one that you referred to was the comic art collection. So MSU holds the largest publicly held collection of comic books and comic art. It's certainly a remarkable area of distinction. We host scholars annually to use that collection. It has been a recruitment tool for colleagues in other departments, English and history, to be able to use that collection. It's international in scope. It's just a remarkable, remarkable collection built really single-handedly by a really great colleague, Randy Scott, who's the comic art librarian in the library. And so it's pretty wild to be the dean of libraries with a comic collection like that. It's pretty fun. But we also have kind of under the leadership of our new head of special collections, Leslie McRoberts, we've tried to return some of the special collections library to its roots a bit and focused again on popular culture and popular culture collections. We recently received purchased and acquired, some of it was purchased and some of it was another acquisition means, major collections in posters. We have radicalism posters, counterculture posters. We've recently acquired the Jack Bodner collection, 60s and 70s counterculture and rock posters from the Detroit, Ann Arbor, East Lansing, basically Michigan. So rock bands like the MC5, the Stooges, anyone who came through Ann Arbor at that time, and major counterculture posters, 25,000 pieces in that collection. And we're still getting through the processing of it because it was acquired during the first pandemic lockdown. So these are areas of distinction. We're very excited to kind of return that collection. At the same time, Special Collections is a teaching collection. We've been building over the last 10 years or so a really nice collection, a teaching collection of rare books, kind of distinctive pieces that get in the hands of students. That's one of the nice things about being at a land grant is all of our collections get in front of students pretty regularly. They're handled by students in under supervision, but in the classroom. And so it's been a lot of fun to get to know our collections, to get to know our experts, and to watch students get to benefit from them as well.
One of my favorite aspects of Special Collections, and it's based on a relationship that I've been able to develop over a number of years, is the papers of Richard Ford. And Richard is an MSU alum, a really absolutely wonderful person. And an extraordinary talent as an author, I think one of America's great contemporary authors. And as we, and to me, it's interesting to understand the craft of writing, and how people edit their work and think about how they put something on the printed page and collecting the papers of people like Richard, I think will, is to me just fascinating, but it also, lends itself to the scholarship of learning that, that really is what a university is all about. And, so that was an entree I had into Special Collections, but I've always been fascinated by the things that, that our university holdings contain, both at the library, at archives, at the museum, and elsewhere. One of the most fascinating aspects of the MSU library is a collection that isn't at all on paper, but is the Vincent Voice Library. And as you think about people of history, we see pictures of people like Franklin Roosevelt or Thomas Edison, but we rarely know what they sounded like. And so to me, the recordings in the Vincent Voice Library are just such a unique thing that someone even had the notion to think about it and assemble a collection is pretty extraordinary. So could you share with our listeners a little bit about that very unique project?
Yeah, that's a great one too, Bill. I would just note before I do, the Richard Ford papers are part of a really nice, extensive collection of Michigan writers at Special Collections. And obviously, everything we're talking about is somewhere on the library's website, but there's a nice page on the library Special Collections site listing all the different Michigan writers for whom we have their papers. And so I would encourage anyone who's interested to stop by that website and take a look. But the Vincent Voice Library is a pretty unique collection of exactly that, historic recordings, news recordings, speeches. And it's not just historic. We've also been involved in oral histories, history on campus, speeches that have taken place, events that have taken place on campus. The history of MSU is captured in oral history. And it is a really unique collection. And it's one of these where it's pretty interesting to me. I think many of us are getting more attuned, maybe not all of us, to being able to listen and focus on voices, especially in things like podcasting or as we return to listening to conversational radio like this program. But right now, for now, the Vincent Voice Library is focused on audio recordings. And so the experience whenever I listen to anything on that is truly remarkable, because you do focus on the voice and what the delivery sounds like and how it is effective when you listen to a speech, a historic speech or a political speech, in a way that I think sometimes, at least for me, gets a little bit lost when you watch the video and you watch all the other cues. And so it's just another pretty fascinating resource that's been collected over years. There's quite a bit of material still being digitized and always being collected. And it's one of these where we're able to partner with researchers on campus when they're doing oral histories. The Vincent Voice Library, depending on the collection scope, is sometimes a destination for those recordings. So it's a fascinating, it's truly unique. There are not very many collections like that.
So let me ask you a few sort of more fun questions to wrap up our time today. First, you know, as a librarian, what's the most fun part of your job?
Things like this are great. I like talking about the great work we do and the really great work that my colleagues do. So that's really a lot of fun. This will maybe give you a sense of the things that I like to do in my, I guess, spare time, whatever that looks like nowadays. But I was invited in recently when we received a major collection of activism posters. And there was an unboxing kind of event, or just really a few of us who were really excited about them got together and watched the Special Collections staff and faculty unbox them. And that was really fun in a way that sometimes I like music, so if I unbox a new collection or something like that, it was the same kind of event, although it didn't cost me any money directly, so that was a little bit different. It was just kind of fun to see what was in there, the care that was taken in shipping it, some of the notes that were included, and hear the experts in the room talk about what we were receiving and what impact it would make for students. And then the other real fun thing, and it's one of these things where, admittedly, when I go into the library now, it's something that I miss, and I sometimes it makes me a little bit sad. The energy in a building like that, with students either working together or taking advantage of the expertise around them, the ownership that students feel for the library, especially at MSU, the students really love that library, and you feel that they take care of it. They love what we do for some of the downtime events. That really carries you through a day. And I always make it a point to try to walk out through the student areas just to kind of see what they're doing and to kind of feel that energy every day. And I miss that right now. So that's a lot of the fun that I get to have.
You know, for many years, my office was located, you know, in a building, in the administration building right next door to the library. And occasionally on an afternoon where maybe I'd had a bit of a more stressful day than usual, I'd just walk over to the library and maybe just walk around and explore a little bit, find a new area of the library that I hadn't spent much time in. pull a book off the shelf and just spend 15 or 20 minutes roaming around. And, you know, it seemed like there was always something fascinating that you could find or new or interesting to just be a bit of a diversion in the day and take a little break. And it's to me one of the very most special places on campus that I've always loved from my high school days when I'd go over there to study to more recently where I just find a time to take a break during the day and roam around a little bit. So I can't help but ask a librarian a final question, and that is, Joe, what's your favorite book?
Oh, that changes all the time, I guess. I guess the easy answer is whatever I'm reading at the time. I just read a really wonderful book called Brother Robert about Robert Johnson, and it was written in collaboration with one of his oldest living relatives, a half sister, and she has to be in her 80s or 90s now. And it was a little bit about his time as a musician, a lot about his time with the family, and then some fascinating parts about the kind of battle over his copyright. And so there's an awful lot there that was really fascinating to me. So I guess it's whatever I'm reading at the time is my favorite book. I like to take the deep dive on a lot of topics. And lately, when I need to unplug from work, and I think a lot of us need to do that, I've really been returning to a lot of the music and musicians that have fascinated me over time. And Robert Johnson's always been one of them.
Joe, it's been a delight to have you with us today. Joe Salem, Dean of Libraries at Michigan State University. And guardian of one of our most valuable resources, the accumulation of intellectual curiosity and knowledge over the decades and centuries that becomes a library. And in today's world, not only books on shelves, but more and more digital materials that are accessible worldwide. And so I encourage our listeners to not only explore their local library, but if they have questions, then Joe and his team of really extraordinary people stand ready to help. So, Joe, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure getting to know a little bit more about the MSU libraries.
Thanks, Bill.